right, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So, a modern mystic video. Alright, shouldn't do it. But just the same subject that does come up, the nihilist again. You know, this idea that somehow you can annihilate the concept of value because there isn't some object that, you know, blinks in space and goes, I have value. Because the value can't be material, okay? That is, you can't make a substance, so to speak. You can't make an element, you know, because the whole catch is you can make a substance, all right, a complicated substance. And the argument would be is, yes, now it manifests something called value because it's having this thing called an experience where there's this part of the experience that sucks and this part that's not suck. And so now you have a problem because you have something of value and now it has to be taken care of because something bad can happen to it. Where in a universe just full of sticks and stones, you know, and even bones, yeah, that doesn't matter. You need feeling brains. So a universe with sticks and stones and even broken bones doesn't matter. No harm, no foul. It only gets complicated when there's things, brains, that are capable of being tortured. You know, that's the extreme case. And you have this negative event taking place that needs attention. And you know it needs attention because you personally experience it. And you know, oh yes, it needs attention. Certainly when it's happening to me, I know to take my hand out of the fire, so to speak, that it will stop the horrible pain thing. Or there's probably better examples, but you know, it's kind of obvious that it's better to feel good than to feel bad. And that's the catch, though, is that we all have to personally experience it and test it. And some people, when they do that test, that somehow they just say, well, I'm certainly, they have to concede they're personally fooled by it. You know, the modern mystic feeds a cat. He does things that certainly do indicate that he's falling for it, that it matters, you know, whether the little critters are happy or sad, or in pain, even worse. But somehow that's fake and foolish. That's being a sissy and a girl. Because there really are no consequential events. Nothing can matter in any way, whether it comes out absolutely horrible, worst case scenario, or best case scenario, there's no such scenarios. There's just stuff, you know, electrons and protons moving around, and it doesn't matter which way they move. Doesn't matter how the sticks and stones tumble in the universe. And obviously they're not falling for their understanding, so obviously they haven't convinced their own habits, demonstrate that it's a very new idea to them, because their habits certainly aren't psycho-killer habits. Where they've annihilated all possibility of it mattering how things turn out. So it's a... It's a surprise to me that this would be an argument, okay? So going in, I didn't think I have to convince people that suffering sucks, okay? So I just thought, okay, they understand suffering sucks, they just don't think it sucks very much. All right, so, you know, I figured I'd have to have arguments with people who think it's okay to torture something for their benefit, to have slaves and all that kind of stuff. I didn't think I'd have to talk to people who had no concept of the idea, okay, that a negative event could take place in the universe. So that's an interest, you know, it's interesting in the sense of, you know, how do brains, how do they add that up? Because yes, as much as I try to understand that position, because yes, I see certain advantages to having the psycho killer position. It takes a lot of the pressure off in terms of worrying about your own performance when you know it doesn't matter how you perform. It doesn't matter how many people you hurt. It doesn't matter how much crap you burn down. It doesn't matter how much... It's like there's no such thing as failure. And you're saying, oh, okay, no failure? Great. You know, fuck. It doesn't matter, you know, if I just, you know, do everything wrong and end up homeless and, you know, die of tuberculosis. Yeah, that's a perfectly good ending. No, it's, you know, I can't imagine that being the perfectly good ending. Now, there's worse endings, so yeah, but I'm just saying, I don't want to have any one of those endings. I would like something a little more graceful. It's more than I like it. I kind of really, 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 really want it not to be horrible. So, I mean, you know, and you're, again, you know, they're falling for it right in front of your face. They're sitting there saying it doesn't exist, but I'm going to drink the, you know, they're drinking the potion they say doesn't work. And they're drinking it right in front of you. And you're saying, what the fuck? You're sitting there with your little dish to feed your cat, and you're going to tell me it doesn't matter whether the cat's dead on the side of the street or half dead on the side of the street. Doesn't make any difference. All the same thing. Who cares? And you're sitting there in the cold with your dish. I mean, come on. You know. What, you're saying that's just some sort of psychological bad habit you have? It's just ridiculous. I couldn't get over it. I couldn't stop myself with my greater, bigger brain. I couldn't tell my sissy emotions to shut up and, you know, stay inside and, you know, roll a cigar out of, you know, cat guts. Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. So that's what I'm going to try to make sense out of it, and I just can't. So I'll see. I'll just make this video over the course of this day and see if I come up with, you know, I wrote some stuff in the comments, you know, figuring, well, maybe that'll get me somewhere, so maybe I'll read some of that. But you know, trying to just get past this idea that, you know, I've said it before, but, you know, our brain was trying to synthesize value in the sense of creating reward and punishment. You know, this whole idea of creating a shortcut to get the hell out of here fast. It needed a motivator that worked really fast. You know, so I said, yes, it created the first ouch. That was that's the game, the whip. The brain doesn't need the reward, actually, because all it has to do is take away the bad stuff, and you're automatically saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, I love you, yo. You're automatically, you just need the one element, okay? It's almost like the universe has the push thing. It doesn't really need the pull. Once it has the push, what does it need the pull for? It just takes away the push, and that's the same thing as a pull, you know, from one side. It created ouch, you know, whatever, 300 million years ago, and, we're stuck in it, you know, we're stuck with it. And it's, you know, it's a synthesized thing that happens inside of a brain, but it doesn't matter whether it's synthesized. It's an actual event. I mean, your consciousness is an event. Yes, this is more obviously an event. Me making words is more obviously events. But obviously the brain did a whole bunch of events that were just the same as making my mouth move, but my mouth didn't move and no air got pushed out and it didn't make any words. But it did all the same stuff building an idea or a thought. Constructing these sentences was a lot of work. The brain did a whole bunch of work. They're real events, they're real pathways, and real things happen, and it's a real configuration. So yes, it's a fake theater. You know, we're sitting in this fake theater with a fake projector and a fake screen, and we're experiencing fake, you know, other things, you know, other probes stuck in us to sense something. You know, we see the screen, we see the but what do we see? When we're using our eyes, we're not really seeing it, right? Because our brain is projecting the picture on its own screen, okay? It can throw anything it wants into the picture. It can distort it any way it wants. wants is a tricky word, any way that's evolutionarily advantageous. It can add features. So it added all the colors. The colors aren't real, all right? They're just frequencies, and it turned them into colors just for us. So that's all the brain's manufacturing perception, and one of the things it's manufacturing is sensations, and it's just a fact that it does manufacture them. It's as real as the perception of color, and there's no reason to sit there and pretend the feelings are, because they're synthetic, made out of arrangements of electrical neurons, the arrangement of neurons and which ones are turned on and which ones are turned off, and that arrangement creates a sensation. When you feel pain, it's because a whole bunch of your brain is making pain. It's creating it by neurologically connecting things in a way that this configuration will be that ouch thing. It's just poking the 300 million year old pain bag and saying, make him feel pain. It's real. It's happening in the universe. It's an event. So that's sort of what I said to him in my first reply was, well, it's an event. The fact is, it's an event, consciousness. It's a whole process of things happening. And that physical use of matter in that configuration means something perceives itself feeling some sort of feeling. And it's a fact that it happened in the universe. So why deny the fact that it happened? Why deny that the matter can create configurations that are not good? Because it creates this idea that you feel bad. It creates the capacity of some brain to have the sense that this event happened. I don't know. It certainly happens. There's no denying the events happening. Just like me saying these words, me feeling pain isn't any more complicated than the process. It's just that it doesn't physically say it's pain. It doesn't have any physical signature that says, oh, look, I'm this pain thing is completely different than the non-pain thing. No, they're going to look the same. It's just going to be a bunch of complex neurological activity. But it's just clear that if this one happened again, over and over and over again, it would be pain. The signature of it is the same. So it's a material thing in the sense that that configuration of neurons creates the thing I experience as pain, and I know I don't want to make that arrangement of electrons and protons. I want to prevent that arrangement from ever happening again, because it's a bad arrangement, because it creates this, it synthesizes a beastie like me going, this feels horrible, this is awful, I want this to stop, shoot me. This is so bad. It happens. And why should we pretend it's not happening because somehow matter can't make an event that's bad or good because we said so? Not because we proved matter can't do it. No, we're just saying it can't happen. That's all they're doing. They're saying it can't happen. They haven't have any evidence that arrangements of matter don't matter. Arrangements of matter don't matter? No, they don't have any proof that arrangements of matter can't matter. That matter can never create an arrangement that is intrinsically bad. I'd argue that, yeah, it can, and we experience it all over the fucking place. That's what I would argue. All right, anyway, so that's enough of a beginning, I guess. And we'll see how it goes. Alright, I'm back. So I guess I'll read what I posted on his last video. I went to go read it, and of course YouTube wouldn't even show my own comment. I had to hit the newest first or whatever. It's just so bad. Anyway, it's bad. Yeah, it's bad. Like it being, it has a badness quality to it. Let's see. Oh, it's kind of a long. All right. I mean, all you've done for six videos is accuse me of doing sissy philosophy, and so that's all he really did. He just kept emphasizing that this is girly talk and girly brain and whatever. That somehow you're just being trivial and just, you know, being silly and yeah. So anyway, I said, I think I can say I'm finally past being triggered by this kind of, by that kind of thing. Ironically, you bring up physics, which as a science, I would imagine as a little fat retarded girl in a pink tutu. Woo woo all the way down. So yes, he's sort of using this as a scientific argument. Like, if you're a real scientist, then you don't believe pain matters, that it's just fake shit that happens in a brain, and it can't possibly have any real substance, that it just doesn't matter. If I made something that was in constant torturous pain, and then I made stuff that was in constant bliss, it wouldn't make any difference. The two things would be scientifically, you know, indistinct. You know, anyway, clearly pain exists as part of a reward and punishment system that has been developed by in brains by evolution. So clearly there was some evolutionary function that could be expedited. Okay, it was to an organism's advantage to become harassed by, ouch, you know, some sense of urgency, I would say, was the reason. The biological organism needed a quick, decisive statement to be exist inside of something to tell it, get the fuck out of here, or, you know, plow into it as fast as you can. I mean, it had to give it some incentive, real hard incentive, to act instead of think about it and, well, I haven't measured all of my hormones and I haven't tested all of my possible thinking. You know, these are organisms that were pretty dumb, so their thinking really sucked. And they could take all day to figure out whether to go forward or go back. I mean, you can see that in a lot of primitive organisms, that they spend a lot of time looking like they're confused. I mean, one of my favorite, you know, turtles. I love turtles. They always look like, whoa, what was I thinking? Yeah. And it's just so charming. Anyway, it seems clear to me the brain had to synthesize value just as it synthesizes the color of leaves. So, you know, colors are sort of fake. There's, you know, our brain adds the color. It's just a frequency difference. And it could just say, you know, it could write the frequency on here. It could use little X's. It could use some other mechanism to distinguish frequency. But instead, it decided to use color. So it's completely invented. There's no such thing in the real world. It requires a brain to make colors. Colors don't exist for other stuff. Brains make colors. For the universe, it's just this frequency versus this frequency versus this frequency. That's what the universe is doing. And our brains are making the fake colors. The simple argument I would make is, in attempting to make fake value, that is, in attempting to create, you know, this idea of it being really important, because, frankly, it's not important that you go fuck the babes or do this or do that, right? It's important for you evolutionarily, but it's not important because the universe says it's important. So it has to fake all this stuff. It has to create some incentive for you to do something that doesn't have any positive or real purpose or function that you would endorse, for example. It's not like it's forcing you to do something, okay? So it's not, you know, it's that simple. Because there is no real value trees. So the fact is there's no value in the universe for it to allow you to see it. You can't see the value in the universe, so it's just making it up. But what's the difference? It's going to look just like the tree. It's going to look like a real thing to your brain. And your brain only sees fake things anyway. You don't really see a tree. You see the light coming off of the tree. I ended up making the real thing. It ended up making the real thing. So that's the, you know, punchline that I've thrown in the air multiple times, is that's the irony. In contriving the idea of value, it ended up making value, you know, the real thing. All right, feelings are the only value-rich event in the universe. So all of these events, leaves falling off of trees and, I don't know, clouds and whatever, galaxies and all this stuff happening, all these other events have no intrinsic nothing. They don't mean anything except in how they affect feeling organisms. That's the only way they can have value, is they have to get it indirectly. The only way a knife can have value is its indirect function. You know, how does it affect feeling organisms? What will it do to them? And that's it. You know, there's no other way for a thing in the universe to derive any significance or meaning except in how it affected feeling things. And I do not trespass. And I do not trespass against science by saying I've personally sampled the event. So I'm sampling consciousness, you know, this feeling, this capacity to feel this good stuff and this bad stuff. And there's just no, you know, and the conclusion is logically inescapable. I can't escape the conclusion that, damn, you know, there's a huge difference, a cavern of difference between these good feelings and bad feelings. Good feelings are identifiably different from bad feelings, and the thing that makes them different is the positive and negative quality. So there's no other way to say it. You have to use kind of circular reasoning, because we don't have vocabulary to identify unique things. All of our vocabulary is all made out of comparing one thing to another thing, and there's nothing like consciousness and feeling in the universe, so there's nothing to compare it to. So we're stuck using kind of circular statements about the existence of this qualia thing. And the fact is, it does exist. The brain uses them to encourage and discourage, and I have no reason to believe that function doesn't work because it's just synthetic. And obviously, I don't have any, I can't prove, okay, meaning, because yes, meaning's going to be invisible. It's not going to be something you can just, you know, hey, here's looking at it. You can see it has meaning because you can just look at it. No, you can't see it. It's not on its surface. It's in its substance. And the substance of our billions, hundreds of billions of neurons, is that it produces this experience. And the fact is that each experience, each moment, is a configuration of the brain. And I could duplicate it. You know, I've had deja vu. You probably had it. Where, yeah, your brain seems to be in exactly the same state as some previous state, and your brain recognizes, hey, I've done this before. Now, why it makes you feel all queer about it, I don't know. Well, I haven't thought about it. I might know, and I just don't know that I know, because I haven't thought about finding the answer inside of the reservoir of crap in my brain. But anyway, who cares? It's not important. It doesn't have much value as an idea. Deja vu. So we'll just forget about wasting time on it. But the idea that when you're in pain, it's a physical event. Your brain is doing a very specific thing that's very different from when you're feeling bliss. So the two things are different things. They're different events in the universe. They can be identified as different events. Now, we don't have the technology at the moment. You know, to some extent, they have some ability to look inside of brains and see where the activity is. But it's a pretty crude picture. But the fact is, the brain is in a different state, configuration, when it's doing pain, and it's in a different state and configuration when it's doing bliss. And the fact is, there are identifiable different states of the universe, and there's no reason to think that they're not different things. You know, all the leaves falling off the tree is different than when the tree has a bunch of green leaves on the tree. It's a different fucking physical circumstance, and there's no reason to presume that those physical differences can't have any significance, that they can't be in some way significantly different. Not just different physically, but significantly different because one of them, this configuration, whenever you make this configuration, this shape of a galaxy, somehow that shape means it becomes a kind of magnetic. It becomes a kind of, it does this nasty function of creating the illusion of torture. And it's an illusion only in the sense that it's a physical event. It's only an illusion because we're saying the event, the screen, is an internal screen and nobody can see it from the outside. I can't see somebody's pain. I can't see the mechanism that created it. And I certainly can't understand why that would manifest into some perception of pain. But the fact is it does. That's how brains work. That's what brains do with those arrangements. And the instrument actually creates this kind of radiation, if you want to call it that. It creates a kind of event, okay, that is in the value sphere, okay? It's in this dimension of significant just because of its arrangement and the fact that that arrangement produces the illusion, the sense, the conscious state of being in discomfort. And the fact that I'm physically tasting it, that should end the conversation in the sense that I'm going to deny my own experience and pretend it's not telling me anything. Come on, it couldn't be screaming it loudly enough. I'm convinced that there's no reason to default on the side of pretending it's not real. That would be stupid. So I have every incentive, even if I had a weak belief in the reality of the value, my own personal experience tells me there's no reason to deny the fact that it's tending to say there's a real huge difference between these two things, and I probably should pay fucking attention because there is some indication it may be real. So it's not like we are insentient machines. And then it's your obligation to explain to us that you have feelings. Okay, it's really important that I feel good and I feel bad. Well, the machine could mock you because the machine isn't experiencing it, right? It doesn't know what a feeling is. And it's just saying, what the fuck are you talking about? You have a little magical feeling? What the hell? It's a brain state. It's a bunch of neurons and atoms and electrons. What the hell are you talking? You're feeling? What are you talking about? That's nonsense. That's not a real thing. What do you, So yeah, you could see having the argument with some AI who, insists that you're just being trivial and nonsensical and silly. But another feeling organism is going to tell you it doesn't mean anything. And then they're going to tell you from a position where it obviously means something to you because every bit of your behavior is orchestrated around the fact that you don't like to be in pain and you're going to avoid it. And you don't like the little things you play with to be in pain, like the stray cat or something else, and you'd like to comfort them as best you can. So why the fuck have a conversation about how it doesn't mean anything? Too ridiculous, almost. It's not that it's almost too ridiculous. It's not logical, in my opinion, to say you have evidence sufficient, all right, to declare this negative position, because the evidence, yes, there is every indication that you can tell the difference between torture and bliss, and that there's no reason to pretend bliss is just as bad as torture, and that torture is just as good as bliss. There's no reason for that default perception when your brain is screaming exactly the opposite. So even if you didn't believe in it, hard, you'd still have to concede there'd be no logic in defying what your brain is saying, defying what the states taste like, assuming that your brain has it all wrong. That would be kind of stupid. So you have every reason to side on the side of caution and pay attention to the fact that the brain is saying these things and not pretend you know better. Yeah, and that you know, oh no, it's okay. All you people worried about torture, it's okay. Don't worry about earthquakes or this or that. Don't worry about any of this stuff, because the torture is just an experience like anything else. Doesn't make any goddamn difference. Just as good as fucking the bitches. You know, chewing your arm off, just as good. Don't worry about it. Well, anyway. All right, well, we'll try again later, see how it goes. But it is a weird, you know, but nothing about, nothing about having this conversation about reality is anything as I anticipated it would be. The hard part seemed to be to construct all the arguments and to, you know, present them and do all that. And it seemed like that easy part is, yeah, once you do that, you know, smart people will just, you know, they'll obey logic. And okay, that's all you have to do is present the logic. They will duplicate the logic in their brain and everything will be done and finished. But no, that isn't, you know, that's not how it works. Instead, you get this, you know, where out of some incentive, you know, for some reason, people don't want, you know, it to add up. And they're going to keep trying to fiddle, erase numbers so it doesn't add up to the, you know, the conclusion, because they don't like that conclusion. They want it to be a 17. And you're saying it adds up to 12, and they really hate that for some reason. And that's the part I just don't understand, because their 17 is not a pretty, you know, this whole, you know, religion is silly. I mean, really, they can't even describe, what's this heaven? Where do you go there? You just wait on the kiss Jesus's ring line all day. You just, you know, stand in line all day to kiss Jesus' ring every day. That's what you do. Oh, what fun. Or you're planting potatoes. Depending on the the religious sect, you know, that's the grand Christian finale, is living in some, you know, just some creepy place where you're not allowed to do anything that's fun. You know, it's like going to jail. Well, it's worse, because even in jail, they, you know, they can't control what you're thinking. But I imagine in heaven, you're not even allowed to have a dirty thought. Dirty thought, dirty thought. You know. So, you know, and then the singularity people and the crystal thingy, and, you know, they really think they're going to, I'm going to have superpowers and I'm going to, you know, be able to, you know, use my eyeballs to create a tractor beam or something. I don't know what the fuck they're thinking. So anyway, it is very discouraging, I have to say. I mean, it just depresses the hell out of me that this project is just so much more difficult than I thought it would be. Shit, it's just disappointing. Oh, fuck. I'm going to have to get lucky. Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't feel lucky. So, yeah, it's just not, you know, it's just going to be a dismal chore. And I'll die with my, you know, broom and dustpan. And that'll be the story. For me personally, it's not going to be a great story. Shit. Disappointing. Yeah, I mean, you know, you figure, you know, saving the world. You should have a pretty good life if you save the world, but no. No. You're not going to have a good time at all. Anyway, till the next time and such. And so forth and whatnot. I mean, it really is about those future victims. They're sitting there saying, you couldn't fix this, you fuckers. You couldn't do anything to prevent all this fucking waste. God. You suck. That's what I'm hearing them, you know, insulting us. You know what I'm saying? Oh, look, I'm working really hard. I'm trying. And they're like, but you're not trying hard enough, obviously. You suck at it, so stop sucking. Oh, okay. I mean, it'd be nice if the future could, you know, give me the instruction book on what would have worked. But anyway, can't do that. But the phantasmagoricals will think, well, in the future we'll be able to do that. We'll be able to fly to the future and get good advice about how to fix things. Yeah. Anyway, fuck, I just hate this planet. Hate it here. I hate it here. All right, back again for another try. So I'm stuck with, you know, what I tried 10 years ago. It's probably that long ago. Just this idea of putting whatever it is being a me is, the brain, and take out all the unnecessary stuff, you know, get rid of all the memories and crap, and just have the part that is sensing, you know, and sensing a feeling. I don't need my eyes anymore, don't need my ears, don't need any of that stuff. Get rid of all of the crap, you know, the hormones or whatever, and you just have the feeling bit, you know, the bit that has a sensation. And you just take that arrangement of material objects, atoms, and you put it in a jar, you know. And then you have this idea that you can duplicate that pattern like a Xerox. You could just make that pattern over and over and over and over. And likewise for the sensations that feel good. So you have the jar full of this feels absolutely awful, nail in the eye. And you can have the jar with, you know, a nice glass of water after a 50-mile hike through the desert or something. You know, some sort of whatever. Blissful, enjoyable feeling. Okay. Anyway, and you can tell, we know the difference, and we're just saying, okay, by their philosophy, you could argue that it wouldn't matter how many jars of torture they made or how many jars of bliss or any of that kind of stuff, and it just doesn't make any difference, and it's all the same, and yeah, it's just, I would argue it seems ridiculous to me to make that argument that we can't tell the difference and that we would risk the difference. So that for no reason, okay, you know, you just have to make jars. Why would you choose to make the one that has every indication of being torture versus making the one that has every indication of being blissful enjoyment? You know, obviously you would go with the default. Especially if you knew the what was in the jar was a duplicate of what you felt. You'd know, there's no way I'm making any of that torture crap, and I'm definitely going to just make the stuff that seems positive and better. Now, I would argue there's a secondary argument having to do with the fact that most of our bliss is really, first, you have to kind of, you know, first, you have to push an organism into an uncomfortable condition to make them feel the relief of comfort, kind of like popping a pimple or something. Make it really annoying, you know, and then make it really unannoying. So back to the argument that the only invention the evolution came up with was the whip. You know, it didn't come up with the idea of carrots and seduction. It just came up with the idea of whip or no whip, and no whip became what we call bliss, that kind of thing. So it's hard to advance the argument. I'm sitting here saying, okay, I've spent a couple of days thinking about this, and I really can't do better than that as an argument for understanding that even if it could possibly, I can't imagine how it can be true, that it could be true that it doesn't matter. It has every appearance of matter. You know, so it just doesn't, there's no good reason for me not to assume the default is correct. That is the assignment that biology is creating, that it's giving me every indication that my suffering is real and that my bliss is real. And there's no reason for me to think they are unreal things or non-events in the universe. They are events. It does happen. And I'd be foolish not to recognize that I can recognize the difference between them and not go with what the superficial analysis says, because that's all we have. We can't see any deeper. I mean, we're really never going to see it as, besides being able to sample it as a consciousness, how else can you dissect a feeling? I don't think there's any way to dissect it to show what it is. You have to experience it to feel what it is, just like a like an arrow. If I take all the molecules of the arrow and I rearrange them, it's not an arrow anymore. You're not going to see the pointiness. You know, the whole pointiness of a sensation is in the fact of feeling one. Dissecting one won't show you how pointy it is, or how value rich it is. You're not going to find its value by dissecting it, because its value is in what it does, not what it is. You could argue that. So that's where I'm stuck in terms of creating a better analogy for the idea that the universe can make value, that there are arrangements of matter that are preferable to other arrangements of matter, that there's safe forms of matter and unsafe forms of matter, you could argue, are, you know, that yes, there's a quality that they can have that is distinctly value rich. I don't know what other word to use besides value. Active, value real, value, and value is just that simple idea of a state that is lesser and a state that is, you know, bigger, you know, a plus and a minus, a profit and a loss, a positive and a negative. And it really shouldn't be more complicated than that. It doesn't seem like the argument should need more than that, and especially in this context where there's no real evidence proving the otherwise. I mean, there's nothing demonstrating the fakeness of our feelings in the sense of it didn't happen, that biology didn't have, there aren't real leaves falling in my brain. When I have a bad sensation, it's a real physical thing that is creating the event of the bad feeling. I mean, it's a real physical thing. All right. So that's where we're stuck for now. I'll think some more. Maybe I'll do it while I'm here. I guess there's some point in talking about what would motivate this tiny percentage of intellectuals. Let's call them intellectuals. I mean, it's usually intellectuals who use this kind of sophistry, whatever the right word is, this playing with words to evade the reality that everything you do has a consequence, and the fact is there's good outcomes and bad outcomes, and somehow we're going to negate that because that way I can do whatever the fuck I want. And I don't have to worry about consequences. I don't have to be diligently concerned about usury and exploitation because I'm protected from any that being consequential. Obviously, it would be to a psycho killer's advantage to be able to negate the negative existence, the negative quality of the torture they wish to impose, you know, the satisfaction of their desire as they watch something else squirm and squiggle at their will, and for whatever reason they they feed off of, you know, being able to manifest fear and torture in some other being. So they're perverse in one or the one way. You know, it'd be one thing just to be somebody who enjoys seeing something else in pain, when for most of us it's not enjoyable because it reminds of us our own vulnerability and how we would not wish to believe that that can happen to people. You know, it'd be nice not to know what the possibilities are. Sometimes the worst thing you can do is go look up something on the internet, because then you'll find out all of these horrible things that can happen that you're probably better off not knowing about. So they not only have this deviant sense of what is enjoyable, so you would argue, a cupcake is enjoyable. They're arguing that, a dog and cat shit sandwich is yummy. You know, some kind of weird thing like that. Something completely repugnant to your senses. A rotting corpse is yummy or something. So it's deviant, like a vampire or something. It's weird in terms of how their physiological reactions are, that they could possibly derive pleasure from something so perverse. And then they also have this deviant philosophy that allows them to negate the very existence of other people's sensations in deference to their own. Now, for many of the psycho killers, Jeffrey Dahmer is a good example, but the difference wasn't that he didn't believe other people suffered. It's that he believed he was such a superior being that his pleasure was worth it. So it was a tiny price for the inferiors to pay, that tiny price to glorify and enhance the significance of the God being kind of thing. So maybe that's a key ingredient. But anyway, it is the philosophy of a psycho killer. I mean, you really need to be able to negate the existence of this negative thing that can happen in the universe, and the fact that you will be decidedly pussy, and you know, you'll be a virus, you'll be the plague, you'll be a polio, you'll be some real negative, horrible thing, rather than some kind of good thing like butterfly or whatever. You'll be a blight and just some sort of bad microbe versus at least benign or harmless thing. And it's a way of avoiding any capacity to be defining, feeling the definition of yourself as just a blight, as a pestilence, as a, a plague to humanity or the feeling community in general.
It's the fact that he has something in common with psycho killers, that's nothing.
But I'm just saying, so for the intellectuals, obviously they're not being driven by psychology. I would argue that, they're not doing this just for psychological reasons. But you do have to wonder, why they need to do this, or why they are compelled to take the facts and bend them in just enough way to try to negate the existence of what we all experience as very real positive and negative qualia of sensations. And they are clearly bending it. I mean, to go so far as to even mock the idea that if you philosophically acknowledge the existence of the state of being, that we have a comfort that we exist in, either very uncomfortable or, the positive, to negate or pretend that doesn't happen when it's happening to them, and when they're completely motivated by it because it is happening to them,
and they clearly are being obedient to it. And yet they're going to try to create a philosophical Tower of Babel, to defend some notion that it's not real. And why would they want other people to think that way is also kind of bizarre, because I would imagine that only makes people more insidiously dangerous. The less they understand how precious the feeling organism is in terms of its state of being and how important it is that it be comfortable, I don't know why you wouldn't want the world full of people concerned about how you feel, not unconcerned. Why would you want to give other people an excuse to not think how you feel is important and that matters? That's kind of bizarre. But then this goes back to why he called himself the modern mystic. Okay. So this goes back to some Stoic Buddhism, where you're just supposed to be a bug. You're supposed to just be obedient to your the shell you're in, okay, whatever form it is, cow, pig, rat, whatever, and you're supposed to just be obedient and play your part as being a bug, and you're just supposed to, play out a life as a, and not pay any attention, okay, to any bigger picture, except be a robot that obeys the mandate of the karmetic system or something. I don't even know how that would fit into it, frankly. But this is like the stories in Buddhism where, you're on the battlefield and you're questioning the validity of the war. and no, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to just lead the men into the slaughter. That's your job. So just do your job, okay, and that way you have satisfied the agenda. It's really not your agenda to decide whether or not who should win the war or whether there should be a war. Your job is just to make soldiers charge and kill. And the moral of the story is... So this is just... It just points out how Buddhism, like all religions, doesn't make any goddamn sense. And especially in the context where we have knowledge of evolution and we know cows aren't, that's not nirvana. You're not going up the ladder. But that might be the context for it, is that he's insisting that the science bend into this notion of some sort of bizarre function for this cycle of life that is like all the other crap in the universe, of no purpose or intended function. And the whole thing, I could just make the comparison to Mars and just say Mars is working much better because it doesn't have a bunch of confused brains being tormented over nonsense that shouldn't be an issue because they shouldn't exist, because they only complicate the simple banging system of matter clumping, and that there's no point in making clumps that are going to complicate clumping with adding value to it. Bothering to have a feeling. So there's lots of a whole pile of life that exists, okay, little living organisms that live and die, and it's of no consequence because they don't have any make it mean something brain. They don't have a capacity to experience it, to sense it, to feel it, because they don't have the neurons that create that perception. So in that sense, life can be much more efficient, in the sense that it can just do all of this eat and die, without it being a crisis of any kind in terms of paying too much for it, torturing too many for too little pleasure. Let's see. And again, the pleasure is, the absence of the whip. The invention of the whip is really the, it's the key point, is that it's just a negative. The negative can't do anything positive. So the positive part is just the illusion part. That's the nonsense. Because the whip is what's created the distortion in the value field, was the creation of the ouch. The ouch needed to be undone. The ouch needed compensation. And if you never made it, then you wouldn't have to worry about it. But it was the first, it's the real money. And that's the only currency there is this negative currency. There is no positive currency. There's just getting back what they stole kind of thing. But you can never get enough back. Well, anyway, we'll call that enough for now. And such, we'll see if I can do anything else. I mean, without, the subject just starts expanding outward. So this little simple argument that the universe, material things, electrons and protons, although they can make insanely complex machines, their argument is none of that complexity can ever create any phenomenon that could have value. That could be where there would be a difference between where something would be more sensible to make more of it, and it would be sensible to make less of something else. That there can never be a circumstance where it would be logical or sensible to make more of this and less of that. The universe can never do that. They're saying by some rule, Husenberg or some other Busenberg, whatever, Dusenberg, Fuchenberg, it's some rule they just made up, okay, that says the universe can't make anything that has any component of value. And I'd argue, stupid rule, okay? Yeah, I have no reason to believe that rule is true. So, fuck you. Bad argument. All right, some hours later. I'm trying to think of another way to analogize it, so this might not be very good, but we're going to try it anyway. So, your computer, okay, performs a task not unlike what our brain does, in the sense that it's a bunch of reflexes. One action causes other actions, blah, blah, blah. And it just mechanically goes through a routine process, and that's why it can reliably add numbers and give you an answer and post the answer on a screen. Now, the point would be is, let's say the number 5 is its answer. The posting on the screen is sort of unnecessary because it's already made the number 5 inside of its own software. And if you were a computer program, you could find the number 5 without it printing it on the screen. And so there's a whole, line of processing. And there's the time before it's figured out and the time after. And all of those steps can be understood. So almost at any point, as soon as you typed in the what's 5, what's 2 plus 3, you could already figure out what it was going to do. And it's a mechanical process, and you wouldn't deny the existence of the 5 on the screen. You certainly wouldn't deny the existence of the 5 in the software. That is, all the stuff is in a certain configuration to produce the number 5. If it's in a different configuration, it'd be the 7, or a different configuration, it'd be some other number. And the same thing is going on in our brain, in the sense that when it says make a feeling, it's just saying here's the number I want. So let's just say any number over 10 is pain, and any number under 10 is pleasure or some kind of dopey thing like that. And so if the number comes up 10, it makes the sensation, and the sensation is just like printing it on a screen. It's just another procedure it goes through. Once it's been triggered, there's another process that happens. There's another computer that's running your essentially, you have a video card in the computer that now handles controlling what's on the screen. So the computer isn't even doing the screen function anymore. It isn't figuring out how to do all the pixeling crap and figure out how to make a 5 look like a 5. And your brain's doing all of that. And so the clear argument I'd make is it's just one of your brain's functions that instead of printing something on a screen, it can make a sensation. It can take the same kind of sense data we get from the world, and instead of just sensing it, it processes it, okay, in some, it's bizarre to us, in some weird way that enables it to project it inside of our brain as a feeling, just as it's making or engineering memories. I can think of an apple and I can say, okay, I can make a picture of one. And your brain's just doing the same process. It's making an imaginary thing, but, okay, the fact that it's imaginary doesn't change the fact that somewhere in my brain, the image of the apple exists as data points, as information. And the information of pain has its own, looks like, an, it has its own shape. Every time you have a certain sensation, it would be because certain neurons were triggered and they have a pattern, they have an arrangement, and you can't change that. So it's sort of like the other example, the analogy of putting part of my brain in a jar that makes sensation, and I would have the capacity to understand the difference between, I could analyze it and see the difference between the one that feels good and the one that feels bad, because they're going to be configured different. Different neurons will be firing, and it'll be a different actual pattern. And the fact is one pattern, you don't want to make it, and you don't want it to happen in the universe because it's called torture, and the other pattern you do want to make because it's called relief, or bliss, or comfort. Comfortable, let's say. It really shouldn't be an argument about arguing about the reality of the fact that the universe is synthesizing complex arrangements all over the place. And the very fact that one of those complex arrangements could percolate into what is a feeling isn't all that abstract. It isn't all that disconnected from understanding it as just one more of the features of organization. So I used in my first comment to the mystic, I used the airplane as an example. It's more than just its parts, right? I mean, you could just throw a piece of aluminum and it's not going to fly. But if I, arrange the aluminum just right and I put a motor behind it and I do this and that, it will fly. And I can break it in just a little simple ways and it won't fly anymore. It's a the engineering has to be engineered for that purpose. And the brain is an engineered device, engineered by evolution. And the fact that it fell upon this idea that it can create a flying machine or a feeling machine, I mean, is there that big a difference? I mean, is it that extraordinarily inconsistent to think that, there's obviously a medium to take advantage of in the sense that there's a capacity for brains to create this very powerful, sentient experience. Because we're doing it, obviously. The fact that it's happening and we're sensing it, we're sampling it, seems even clearer. Like I said, I could maybe understand this argument if I was talking to some machine that couldn't feel or didn't ever tasted a feeling, never knew what a bad feeling was. Well, I can understand some skepticism. But skepticism from other sentient beings who have experienced the cavern of value difference between feeling A and feeling B, feeling bliss and feeling torture. Come on. I shouldn't have to have that conversation. And so again, it is a decided teeny minority of the human beings on Earth who would say that they have scientifically proven that it has been scientifically proven that matter can never feel, that it can never manifest a value experience. Very tiny. If it's manifested, it somehow didn't really happen. If it's an illusion that I'm feeling, and somehow it didn't really happen as a feeling, it was some other event, and I've confused it by thinking it was important. it really is a strangled perception of reality. And you do have to wonder what motivates it, because it is so strangled, so tortured in terms of how it's been twisted and manipulated to try to draw this conclusion that all of sentient experience is of no consequence, and it doesn't matter whether you torture 10 billion people or you pleasure 10 billion people, same difference. Doesn't matter how bad the outcomes are, it's all just as good. Good outcomes are just as good as bad outcomes. Too silly. All right. And that there is no such thing as a bad outcome, I guess, is the real argument. And there's no such thing as a good outcome, but still, it's ridiculous, I think, as a point you can argue from anything other than God's perspective, frankly. So he's accusing the people who are believers that it has something to do with this real universe, that this is actually happening, that we are actually having feelings and sensations, and they are of significant importance. to deny that, is the religious theory, in the sense that it's made out of very little, if any, evidence. Decided evidence. It's just an axiom. It's just a statement. There shalt not be a value experience, a value event in the universe. And they're just saying it. And they're clearly not even able to behave as if it's true. They can't even convince their own psychology that it's true. So it seems just a desperate evasion, frankly, of reality and a way of escaping personal accountability and any notion of what game we're really playing by being here and how important it is to take your life seriously. Because the fact is, torture is what you're playing for. Yours or somebody else's, but as a fact, more or less of it. And that if you're going to live a good life, it somehow has to prevent more harm than it produces. Just a fact. All right. Well, maybe that's enough. Quite possibly. We'll assume so. That's what I'll do. Anyway, so I think that's the best I'll do. Maybe I can leave this video open for a few more hours, and we'll see if I come up with anything else to add. Doesn't seem probable, but we'll wait and see. But if not, see you next time and such.